Our next fundamental is, quote, "As a man thinketh, so is he," close quote. There is no more important fundamental than, quote, "As a man thinketh, so is he," close quote. And Shakespeare tells us, quote, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so," close quote. There is but one thinking agent, the divine mind. And man, by reflection, thinks as divine mind thinks. We learn in Christian Science that there is no personality. Then there is no personal thinking. Thinking goes on independently of personal volition. We, as persons, are not the source, origin, cause, producer, or beginner of thoughts. God, the divine mind, is the only thinking agent. And by reflection, we are the showing forth or the conscious identity of all his thoughts and ideas. There is no good or bad experience that is the result of personal thinking. All good experiences, as health, wealth, and harmonious living, are not the results of divine mind thinking, but these experiences are the thinking itself that divine mind is actively and consciously being. And all bad experiences, as sickness, poverty, and inharmonious living, are not the results of mortal mind thinking, but these so-called experiences are the thinking itself that mortal mind, wholly a supposititious mind, is being. We need to be keenly awake to the fundamental truth that we are never outside the range of thinking. Thinking is either the supposititious thinking of the so-called mortal mind that we entertain as our mind, or thinking is the one and only thinking of divine mind. Experiences at every instant either identify the mythical mortal mind that we accept as our mind, or experiences identify the divine mind, our mind. The seeming inharmonies of our body are never the result of so-called mortal mind thinking about these inharmonies, but these inharmonies are the thinking that mortal mind itself is being. Likewise, the harmonious experiences of our body are never the result of divine mind thinking about these harmonious experiences, but these harmonious experiences are the thinking that divine mind itself is being. The character of mortal mind is, in every way, contrary to that of immortal mind. Mortal mind is finite, restrictive, afflictive, inharmonious, deceitful. It constantly declares imperfection, in direct opposition to the infinite perfection of all being, our being. See Science and Health, 252:15-8. In its operations, mortal mind deprives us of everything desirable and worthwhile. And until we do away with mortal mind as a presence or a power, by establishing divine mind as the only mind of us, mortal mind will continue, in belief, to be active as thinking and will embody in our experience all that is finite and material. When confronted with the suggestion that our mind is finite material and mortal, we should counteract this suggestion with the confident assertion that this mind unfolding as our mind is infinite, spiritual, divine, and that it cannot unfold negatively or enfold in any way but in accordance with its own divine nature. Let this mind be in you, which was mind to Christ Jesus. Our next fundamental is a demarcation between reality and phenomena. In all our metaphysical work, we should maintain a clear demarcation between reality and mere mental phenomena. It is most important to understand that all sense impressions of the supposititious mortal mind, such as swelling or pain, are never of the body, nor on the body, but are mere mental phenomena, the nothingness of mortal mind. Our textbook says, quote, "An image of mortal thought reflected on the retina is all that the eye beholds," close quote. Then, the inharmonies seen on the body are never bodily conditions, but are images of mortal thought reflected on the retina, or on the human consciousness. It is here that all material sense impressions, in belief, are registered. It is essential that we, as Christian Scientists, know this fundamental truth, that all that we behold as inharmonies are images of mortal thought. Otherwise, we are unable to deal with these mental phenomena that seem to confront us and seem to oppose truth and actuality. The term phenomena stands for the appearance of things, as distinguished from things as they actually are in truth. It means that what we see humanly, because of false sense impressions, may appear material, finite, and mortal, when, in their reality, they are spiritual, infinite, and immortal. Let us use the railroad track as an illustration. The parallel track symbolizes reality, while the converged appearance, which is never of the track nor attached to the track, symbolizes a mental phenomenon. We call the converged appearance a mental phenomenon since it is a mental image of a mythical mortal mind. With our eyes or our material belief, we behold a converged image of the track, but with our understanding, we distinguish between the converged appearance, which we seem to see, and the track, which is parallel. With the understanding that we have of the track as parallel, we detach the converged appearance from the track and deal with it as we deal with any mental phenomenon, not as a condition or as entity, but wholly as an image of mortal thought within the realm of supposititious consciousness. In dealing with mental phenomena, we do not destroy things, nor change things, because the images of mortal mind are not conditions or entities to be destroyed or changed. But we obey the rule found in Science and Health, which tells us to rise, quote, above physical theories and replace the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas, close quote. And this rising and replacing is all done within the realm of our own reflected thinking. Moses saw with his eyes or with his material belief that the bush appeared to burn, that his hand appeared leprous, and his rod appeared as a harmful serpent. But we read, quote, "The angel of the Lord appeared to him," close quote. What was this angel of the Lord? The angel of the Lord was the mighty impressions of reality appearing to the mind of Moses, and instantly these angels, or powerful impressions of reality, became active as the human consciousness of Moses. Through this spiritual awakening to the truth of omnipotent and omnipresent reality of all these things, Moses perceived the nothingness of material appearances, or mental phenomena, and proved that these material appearances, which his eyes beheld, were not attached to the bush, or to his hand, or to the rod. When Moses, within the realm of his own thought or bosom, clearly perceived that reality only was present and had power, immediately he saw the bush as not consumed, his hand as whole, and the rod as a staff to lean upon. Moses clearly discerned the demarcation between realities and mere mental phenomena, and he also discerned that all realities, quote, "verities priceless, eternal, and just at hand," close quote, were never touched by false appearances any more than the track is touched with the converged appearance. With this same understanding of omnipotent and omnipresent reality, Jesus beheld the perfect man as an entity existing in the very place and at the very instant where a sinning mortal man appeared to mortals. See Science and Health, 476, 32-4. Jesus clearly perceived that the person, or the sinning mortal man, was mental phenomenon only, and was not an entity in that place. Jesus knew that sin was not a condition attached to perfect man, and was not something to be healed or saved. Jesus dealt with this mental phenomenon called a person or a sinning mortal man wholly within the realm of his own thinking. He rejected the image of a sinning mortal man for the correct view of man as perfect, whole, and eternally saved. Jesus, in his thinking, rose above physical theories which were not attached to man at all, and replaced these objects of material sense with the permanent ideas of soul. For us, like Moses and Jesus, to maintain a clear-cut demarcation between the realities of mind and the mental phenomena of mortal mind is indeed a fundamental that is most important.